Exit number 12092, Reel 2.
Mr. Jordan, Reel 2.
With going across the country, we were going from village to village trying to track these Arabs down. In the end, we had to abandon it because in their country, they beat us. They hid and we just did not. But that was the only time I was there in the 2 years. But other parts of the striking force may have to have done that. I don't know.
What did you see of conflict between Arabs and Jews whilst you were there?
Very little. Now, I can't say I did, to be honest. Because in that particular time, most of the trouble was the Jewish. The Arabs had done their share in the latter end of the 30s. And it was then when the war was on that the Jews started their efforts. So I only know of what that part of what I've been told or known through the papers as anybody else would know.
But did you see Arabs attacking Jews and Jews attacking Arabs?
No, never did.
What were relationships like between Arabs and Jews when you were there?
Well, when I was at Tel Kebir police station, we used to go out ourselves to the Arabs in their villages, but they never mentioned anything as regarding the Jews, and we didn't have any trouble. They'd invite us in. The head of the village, they'd invite us in if when he's there, he says, "Now you stay," and they'd make a meal for you. And it was a real good slap up meal. Sometimes you never know what it was. It might be chicken. The Arab way of having it, you had it on the floor, at it, everything else. Another time it might be a small pig, but they were very good to us. And mind you, I can't say a lot against the majority of the Jews as well. It was only the main terrorists that was the naughty boys at that particular time. It was more, I mean, it's the same, you've got the naughty boys in Ireland today. And this is what the main part we was after, was the naughty boys of the Jews.
What was the worst time you had in Palestine?
No, I can't say a lot, but anything in particular that was bad in itself, because it carried over on that time. You'd have quite an easy stretch. You might go for 4 or 5 days or 2 or 3 weeks and nothing happened, and then all of a sudden either the Stern gang or the other gangs that were there, they'd have a raid on one of the police stations, and then it'd start again. So you'd be out probably at early morning to try and catch some with roadblocks, when as soon as you knew that that they'd attacked the station, you'd be trying to get them. So your duties was, as I say, was changing from day to day. You never knew what you was on. unless you was on the night duty, going around with your truck night work. Then you didn't do much during the day, and you're just on that, going from station to station, police station to police station, checking everything around, keeping your eyes open to see if you could find anybody moving. One time when I was at Sorona again, there was a police station attacked, and we was nipped out in the morning first thing about 6 o'clock. We went to the other side of Jaffa over into the sand dunes to have a look if we could spot anybody coming from the direction of the police station that was attacked, and we saw a party of about 20 to 30 Jews coming across towards Jaffa, which the Jaffa itself and Tel Aviv were more or less side by side. The two places were, Jaffa was the Arabs and the Jews were in Tel Aviv. And of course they'd come in that way to get through to Tel Aviv. And we spotted them about 3-4 miles away, this party. And of course my truck, which I was out in, it was only myself, driver, wireless op, and two or three, I'm not sure whether it was two or three other constables. So I decided to get through to HQ and ask for backup. So they said, okay. They sent a company of paratroopers from the 6th Airborne out as backup. They arrived in time. So I explained to their commander what was what, and I said, well, I'll leave it to you. If we can have them, we'd like the lot. So he said, okay. So he deployed his men out. We carried on, let them come in. And when they got close enough, the paras ordered them, or asked them to surrender. They wanted them. We went forward and asked for the police, and they opened fire. So the paras opened fire back. Pardon?
What with?
With small arms fire. But that stopped. So they only sent a couple of bursts, and they realised that they were meant, it was meant. So they laid down arms and no more trouble. We collected the lot. And they went into custody.
How many of them were
there? I'm not sure offhand, as I say. But I know it was somewhere around 20 to 30 that had gone and made this attack on the station. And they had all, we got their arms, ammo, ammunition, grenades, everything they had, we captured the lot.
What kind of ages were they?
All vary from 18 to 30.
What kind of backgrounds had they come from?
I don't know. That wasn't... We only took them in and then put them into the... to the authorities who done their questioning, and leave it to them.
Whereabouts was that exactly?
Well, just outside, it was on the sand dunes just outside Jaffa.
And was that in 45?
No, could have been. It could have been, because I know we went out from Sorona.
When did you first go to Sorona? Do you know the month?
No, not offhand. No.
Or when the month that you left Sorona?
Well, round about Christmas. Let me see. No, I wouldn't swear to the time. It'd be the latter, either the very latter end of 45 or very early 46.
How frightening was it serving in Palestine in the police?
Well, not too bad. Taking everything in consideration and taking it from day by day, and your recreation and everything else which we had, it didn't to think of it in today, it wasn't frightening in itself, because the whole point is you had that, you joined for that type of duty, and when they called you to go out, you automatically, your discipline, you automatically away you went. And to think of anything, what was going to happen, you just don't. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
I just didn't, you know, not to think of, I didn't think of anything at that time.
Were you injured or wounded whilst you were there?
No, not in there, not in Palestine.
Did you think that the mandate was going to finish?
Well, you see, there was still another 2 years to go of the mandate when I left. So, as things were going, I mean, it was still a lot of the Jews were still trying to get in with their immigration, and it was very heavy work for the boys with trying to stop the illegal immigration. And of course the Jewish terrorist groups which was trying to bring them in and trying to make it so awkward for the police themselves. So I didn't think anything about that.
Did you think the Palestine police were impartial as between the Arabs and Jews?
Well, we never done that. Never thought of it. We only done it ourselves as we supposed to be. And we wasn't for either side. No, never went to either side.
Did you make friends from amongst the Arab or Jewish population, or were you told not to?
No, we was never told not to. A friend of mine, when we was at Kafr Witkin, a friend of mine, he used to go into Haifa. When he's had his weekend passed, he had a weekend, and he liked to go there, and he used to talk to Jewish girls there. There was one Jewish girl he had, she was a singer. And it was never stopped. We were never told that we couldn't go around and talk to people and join in their whatever we wanted, their functions. If we wanted to do it, we could do it.
Were you happy serving in Palestine?
Oh yes, I enjoyed every day of it. I did, because myself, I was as well. I was very in the forces, and when I was in the army, I was athletic, and I used to enjoy my sports. And of course, anything. Well, if you enjoy sport, you can get on in any force, and that included the Palestine Police. If you were sport, and I represented a company of. At football, hockey, cricket, rugby, and I used to enjoy my swimming. So I had plenty of recreation that I could do. So with having a lot of recreation, you didn't think so much of other things that was happening. Off duty, although it was a football match. So you forget nothing at that, you see. So this is how it went on, and by having plenty of recreation as well as your duties, I never regretted the days I was in there.
Did you play a spot against civilian teams?
Oh, yes.
Against Arab and Jewish teams?
No, not so much the... we'd have a game against the Jewish teams as well. If they... Well, if they was in the football, because we used to have the... I played, as I said, football for the company team, and we entered the Palestine League, football league, and whoever was there in the league, we played them just the same as anybody, any other league. So it made no difference whether it was Jew, Arab, army, because the army, there was army people there as well, they joined the football leagues. So we all amalgamated just the same and no problems.
How useful do you think the army were in Palestine?
Well, it was needed. You had to have them for your backup. We couldn't, you see, our force was not strong enough on itself. It wasn't strong enough in itself. Not with what they wanted of us, with the troubles that was happening at that time with the immigration and everything else, you know, as it was going.
Was it a well-paid job?
Yes. It was well-paid for as far in... I can't remember what it was, but... what we got paid, but we was only paid at those days once a month, and it was all right.
Were you able to save?
Well, no, because what I'd done, you see, I didn't save to that extent. My money was automatically sent home to the wife, because she was here in England until. Till the liberation, and then she came back home here. But my money was all going through there, you see.
Could you have stayed longer in the Palestine police?
Oh, yes, I could have done that. I could have stayed... I could have gone back from here. I came home on leave. I could have gone back and served till the end of 1948, or the May 1948, when it stopped, if I'd have wanted. But I came home and... I decided I'd been away long enough and had long enough with nearly 14 years in the forces, included the police. So I thought, well, now it's time I settle down, because I had my son here.
Now, if I can ask you some questions about the Sherwood Foresters, because you were saying you were with the BEF. Hmm. Which battalion of the Sherwood Foresters?
2nd Battalion.
And when did you go with them to France?
Well, immediately, about two to three weeks after the outbreak of war, we went over.
And you said it was with the 1st Division?
We were with 1st Division, 3rd Infantry Brigade, 1st Divi.
Where did you go to in France? Where was your base on the Belgian border?
Well, we round Templeuve and Lille, round that area.
Were you constructing fortifications there?
Yes. Yeah, we was making pillboxes, digging them and everything else. That's what we went up there for on the border.
How strong were the fortifications that you made?
Well, mostly sandbagged. You know, we were just filling sandbags and things like that, making gun emplacements in case anything happened. Others were doing stronger fortifications, but our particular one was only just that type of thing.
What were your relations with the local French population?
I couldn't speak the language, so I didn't bother too much.
You didn't have any contact with them?
No, not more than that. We'd go into the cafes and have a drink or something like that, but amongst ourselves, But we never done a lot. It was only we was only at small villages just outside the towns and things like that, and that was our main thing. So they had a cafe in the village, and we'd probably go in there for a small drink or something like that at night, at the end of the day, or we'd stay in the canteen that we had.
You said that you went into the Maginot Line.
Between the Maginot Line and we went down to the Saarbrücken. We were sent down there in the early December 39 and took over a section of the front line from the French. That was between the Maginot Line and the Siegfried Line. And we had a small tour of duty at times there, and then till we was relieved.
Did you see much action there?
No, very little. It was just, most of the action was overhead, if that was all, not individual.
You mean shelling?
Yeah, you'd just get the ordinary shelling, the odd shelling, as they wanted to, but not strong stuff at that particular time, 1939.
Did you go on patrol?
No, I was mortar platoon.
Did you fire your mortar in the Saarbrücken area?
No, we didn't fire there, not there.
Did there seem to be an agreement with the Germans to keep things quiet?
I don't know. I couldn't say anything about that. No, I don't think there was. But I know the Germans, you could see them and they were around. And there was the boys of the companies, the infantry companies, because as I said, I was mortar platoon. But for the ordinary sections, they'd go out, they'd do their patrols, and the Germans would do their patrols.
What impression did you get of the French army and its quality at that time?
Well, we didn't deal with the French army a lot. Again, you see, it's the same when we went to... When we went back out of there, we went back up to the Belgian border again, a place called Batchy. And, of course, there's not much French army personnel there. It was mostly British in that area, and the ordinary, as I say, it was in small villages, the chateaus and that there, that's where the officers were, the officers' messes, and they commandeered them, you see. So the French army themselves, we had no problem with them. There wasn't, unless we went into the main towns and cities, you didn't contact them.
What happened to you on May the 10th, 1940, when the Germans attacked?
We went straight up to the Louvain's area in Belgium.
Can you tell me what happened on the way from France to Louvain?
No, well, we had our lorries, and we just went from... the lorries took us straight up to Brussels, and we got out of the lorries at Brussels and marched to... we went along the road, and till the commanding officer or whoever was in charge had decided, they'd I think must have gone beforehand and decided where we'd hole up, which we did at Louvain's.
What kind of positions did you take up there?
Well, on the river bank. There's a river there, and the river bank was we was one side of the river, so we could see overlooking the Germans as they came towards us. If they came to in our area, we'd see them ages before they ever got to us, which happened.
What could you see of the German advance?
Not very hilly country, but you've got the hill. We was on the hill looking over the river, and about 4 or 5 miles away there was a wood, forest wood, and that's what the Germans came through that. And until they came through the wood, we didn't spot anything. And when they hit the wood, then the RA, they were far enough to be shelled, and then they got their shellings from the RA, our backup.
Were they advancing on foot?
Well, I don't know, not... Because, as I say, they came into the woods, and of course, you got your spotter planes up, and they spotted them come in. So the RA started on that, and then from there, they carried, it got through, because I was more to platoon. We had our pits, and you're down in your pits. You don't see much of them. Unless you're on the top, you don't see much of advancing.
Did you open up with the mortars?
Not that time, no. We didn't use them there. By the time they came, because we was there for 2 or 3 days, I'm not sure offhand. And of course, we had to move out because our flanks gave way, and so where we were, our positions that we was, the Germans attacked to the flanks and broke through there, so we had to come back. And on the return, coming back, then after about 2 or 3 days, the Germans caught up with us again, and we was in a monastery, in the gardens of a monastery, and when the Germans caught up with us, and that's when we opened fire for the first time.
Where was this monastery, do you know?
No, I couldn't say.
Had you been under fire at Louvain?
No, not myself, not individually.
Had your battalion taken many casualties?
No, but shelling, the Jerrys had shelled, and there's one of the boys here that's living on the island now. The first shell that the Germans sent over, his mate was killed, Blake, and he had his hand blown off. That was the first shell that came over, and that boy is still alive, and he's actually living about a mile away.
What happened when you made this stand at the monastery?
Well, not too much for individually, because with mortars, with the mortar system that we have, or we had in the army, you'd probably dig your positions, and the infantry themselves, they're the ones that take everything. I mean, we're only in support. Mortars only support the infantry going forward or retreating, whatever's happening, and you've got your observation, your NCO, senior NCO of your section, he's got his observation posts, and he's the person doing all the observing, and you just obey orders, alter your sighting and fire according to he requires, because it's all telephone that you're connected with, so you in a lot of cases you don't see everything that's happening.
How much of a fight was it at the monastery?